This is As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the show where we bring you the stories behind the stories that matter in your life. We'll tell you something maybe you didn't know, hear from the experts, authors, and others, and hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. But in every case, we call it As We See It. On today's show, remember how stupid you looked in your new wave clothing in the early 80s? Good, me neither. If you can't get Hollywood to pay, why not crowdfund your next movie? And we're talking soccer. And this time, we have to win? What? Let's meet the friends. Jennifer Bjorklund is in the newsroom.
Are you ready for a disease-repelling newspaper?
No. But that's all you've got, isn't it? I love it. All right, just finished putting up his open house signs. Here's Jay Capadonia.
Everyone wants to be king. Call the shots or be the head honcho. Well, I've got details on how you can make that happen.
And if not for a lucky break, he'd be working on a farm right now. Here's Chris Martin.
Speaking of farms, Phil, animal cloning is on the rise, and I'll give you an update.
Ooh, all right. Those cloned animals are tasty, Jennifer Bjorklund. Let's get things started. What'd you call it? An insect repellent newspaper?
That's right. A disease fighting newspaper. Are you ready for that?
Okay. How does that work?
It's pretty interesting. A Sri Lankan newspaper called Maubina has taken to fighting.
What?
Maubina.
Wasn't that a Beach Boys song?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
Papa Umaumau. Papa Umaumaubina.
Well, they've taken fighting dengue fever to new levels. For National Dengue Week, they actually printed a mosquito repellent paper. The whole paper was printed using inks with citronella essence mixed in, and they claim every letter of every word stopped mosquitoes from biting. And guess what? The edition sold out by 10 a.m. Sales were up 30%. They say people read the paper early in the morning and in the evening, the time the mosquitoes are usually out there buzzing around. So good news for them. There's no vaccine for dengue, by the way.
Not yet.
And you know how they put up the big nets over your bed when you go in the Far East traveling?
Sure.
It's really effective for malaria transmission, but it doesn't work against the insect species that bite during the day. And Sri Lanka, by the way, was the first place where they use so much DDT that now the mosquitoes are resistant to almost every insecticide.
Super
so
mosquitoes.
All you can do
yeah.
is try to get them to go away.
And those
it's
are those
good.
Tiger mosquitoes that bite during the day, right? That we got
oh, I hate
a little
those
concern.
Things. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, hate's a little strong.
Yeah.
No,
I hate
don't
them too.
Like, listen, look, there was a mosquito buzzing around my head all night last night, and I hate it. I hate it. It's just bite me and fly away. Stop buzzing around my head.
And in the dark, that ugly whirring noise that they make.
Oh.
Yeah. Here's an insider's tip, though. You want to know a first world way to keep the mosquitoes away?
Oh, this ought to be good.
Old Spice.
There we go.
Really?
It keeps everything else away.
It's a good way to keep
away.
I think
away.
Essence of citronella is the main fragrance in there. All right,
funny.
So there's a billboard campaign across the country, and maybe we've had them here. I'm not sure, but there's something coming out, and that people are up in arms about these billboards. Why?
These give me the willies. Do you? My husband cannot wait to watch this show. It's called The Strain. It's on FX. I think it's premiering in like 2 weeks. But it's that billboard that has an eyeball with like a worm coming out of it. And if you see the promos on TV, I have to look away when they come on because the worm is like creeping into the eyeball. Have you seen those?
I'd be worried about your husband if I were you.
Oh, he can't wait to watch it. It's the same thing as with stuff going in the ears. You know, the Wrath of Khan, I think, was that movie where the bug goes in the ear.
Yeah, the
and
ear
takes
wigs.
Over. Oh, I can't stand it. So, yeah, all my bug issues are coming to the forefront today. But those stupid billboards have been up all over L.A. And guess what? I'm not the only one that hates it because they're pulling them down.
Oh,
they're too upsetting. They're in L.A. and New York. The actual show is a medical thriller about parasites that turn New Yorkers into monsters.
Oh, well,
what's wrong with that?
I know. I don't know, but I don't want to see that
it's
eyeball
It's gross.
Thing.
I'm with you, Jen. You know, I'm not a bug person either. I don't like them crawling on me. I don't like them near me. I don't like them flying around.
It's,
no.
It's worse than a fight in church.
Oh, you heard about this one? It's great. This guy accused of beating a fellow churchgoer at the Mormon church in a church service is reporting to jail today for 30 days, starting today. His name's Wayne Dodge. He's 52 years old. He actually was looking at 6 months behind bars, but they kind of reorganized some of the charges and he worked a deal. Here's what happened, though. He was He was involved in a seat saving scandal.
A what?
A big deal at the LDS church. Well, it was a packed service. It was for a baby dedication. And there was a guy who was a visitor who says, hey, you know, we're saving these three rows for the family. And this guy, Dodge, he's like, this is where I always sit. I'm a regular with the ward. So there was a confrontation.
Boy.
Dodge says, I'm not moving. This is my seat, you know? Later in the parking lot, oh, it was on. Dodge punched the guy.
Yeah.
He ended up with a bloody face. To top it all off, he swerved to hit the guy with his car as he was driving away.
No
well,
kidding.
He's got 30 days.
You know, you don't mess with Bible bangers in the Bible Belt. Mm-mm. You just do Mm-mm. not.
No, especially when they're about to go out on the rock and hold the baby up and do that Lion King song that they
did. It's a vineyard.
Right. That's exactly what it was. I mean, you don't mess with the LDS people in Utah.
Exactly.
I knew we'd get him singing. Yeah. I knew we'd get him singing. It's only a matter of time.
Him and Disney tunes, I swear.
Yeah. All right. And so I walked into the studio today, and immediately Jay said, hey, you, come here. You want to buy something?
Yeah, yeah, but you don't need a lot of change. You just need a good sizable chunk of change if you want to own a city in South Dakota. It's a little over six acre plot of land, if you will, but it includes a bar, a workshop, three trailers, and a single home.
6 acres.
Six and like roughly a quarter.
And you would own the city.
You would own the city. There's only a population of 2 at the moment.
Right. Easy to handle population.
Exactly. But you can become the mayor, the chief of police.
The sheriff.
You can do anything. You could totally go boss hog on this town.
I'm the sheriff in this here town.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to say that.
There you go. As you like hitch up your belt.
Yeah.
Clink.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. All you need is 400 grand.
Really?
400 grand will buy you a town of Sweat, South Dakota.
How do you spell Sweat?
S-W-E-T-T.
Not a pretty name.
First thing on the list, rename it.
Oh, wait,
rename
let me say it as the sheriff would say it.
Not a pretty name, but we like it.
That's right. Yeah, right? I, for one, would just make it Campedoniaville.
Campedoniaville? I don't think you even need the ville.
No ville?
No, just Campedonia.
Campedonia.
Yeah.
So who are the other two people that live there? You move in, and it's you and those two other people. You hold an election, you're going to be a minority. You got to like have a wife and
right.
someone else over 18.
Oh, you can move them in. So Clem and Hazel live there?
No, it's Lance and his wife, Lance Benson, and he actually owns the town right now, and he doesn't want to get rid of it, but they're running into some financial problems, and they're trying to offload it onto somebody else.
Oh, so a quick sale.
Yeah,
I think it's a good investment considering the fracking boom going on in the Dakotas right now.
Oh, there you go.
You know, put up something, put up a hotel, or maybe turn it into a vampire thing, you know, where all the fans of vampires can come out like once or twice a year. Welcome to Sweat.
All you need is a convention and you're making bank.
Yes.
You know, and host like the weird ones, like the vampire convention or like those... You know what a furry is?
Where guys?
Yeah,
no.
The people they dress up in like the mascot things. And then they
later, you can invite the bronies to come over.
Yeah, you know, just have like funny conventions like that that no other respectable town in this country will host.
Or you could call the farmers over who clone their cows, Chris.
Yes, you can.
Why is this happening?
Well, it started back in the mid-90s with Dolly the sheep. And it just became more popular, you know. I mean, there's a reason we genetically clone animals. These companies, they're working in their petri dishes to make these identical copies of these animals. And the reason is you can reproduce desirable characteristics like leaner meat, higher milk production, disease resistance. And so they're working hard at it. There's a large company out of Iowa that actually is putting out hundreds of cows each year. They're called Transova Genetics. And they're getting big money for it, too.
Hey, that was a pretty big word there. Congratulations.
T-O-G.
Good job.
T-O-G.
T-O-G. Next, the people are going to be going to their council member and saying, I demand a T-O-G label on my meat before I buy it at the grocery store. Right?
Yeah, they have to tell you. They have to tell you if it's cloned meat.
Yeah.
They
can't just put that on the shelves.
They're just going to be breeding a big tenderloin with legs, with hooves.
That's what it is.
Yes.
And they all look the same. These cows are white. They're let me tell you what they are. They're white-haired, short-horn heifers is mostly what they're producing.
I think I dated her.
Oh my gosh.
And in 2008, the FDA approved consumption of these cloned cows, pigs, and goats. Although recently, the European Commission proposed a ban on cloning animals, but the the professionals are saying it's too late. There's no going back. There's thousands of cloned animals. These animals are breeding. So,
yep.
Jen, I can't get. Wars. I bought tenderloin this weekend, and I can't get the image of tenderloin with feet out of my head now. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, did you already eat it?
No, not yet. So thanks for giving me something to look forward to. But I'm sure there's going to be a show about it on FX here coming up soon.
Right, with the worms and the billboards.
How about a pig that's all just ribs and bacon?
Oh, see, I like that, but still, it's gross.
Scientists aren't on board with that.
Science is disgusting.
Yeah.
But tasty. All right. Yeah. Team USA earned a berth into the next round by losing to Germany. Now let's see if they could just win, baby, against Belgium tomorrow. We're going to talk soccer with an expert next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends here on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Thanks for tuning in to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends here on KFWB News Talk 980. Of course, the World Cup is here. We're talking about it because we talk about soccer every 4 years. Those of us who don't talk about soccer the other 4 years and 11 months. Doesn't it seem like that's the case? There's this whole parallel society of the people who are totally into soccer and everybody else. And I will admit plainly that I'm part of the everyone else.
Same here.
But I like watching. I mean, come on, go Team USA. I like winning. I like sport for sports. And tomorrow, Team USA faces elimination, something they used to be able to face without fear. But now, a loss, and they go home. A couple of fun facts about soccer, Jay.
Yes, a very popular breakfast joint. Well, I think they're open 24 hours. Waffle House. Now, they don't have any stores here in California. But across the country, they are humongous. That's where everybody goes.
Yeah.
That's where, actually, I think Kid Rock got into a big fight a few months ago.
At Waffle House. Okay.
It's what happens. It's kind of like our Denny's, if you will. So here's the deal. They are basically telling patrons to lay off the Belgian waffles, lay off the sugar and the syrup and the fruit to support Team America. They sent out a tweet yesterday that says, "We don't believe in Belgian waffles."
Because they're playing Belgium.
Because they are playing Belgium. They say one person responded back to him, "Well, what's your opinion on Belgian waffles?" They tweeted, "We dominate them."
Yes.
They've also been tweeting out America, not America, America.
America.
Yeah, so actually, it's actually kind of funny. And another fun fact, more people have posted on Facebook about the World Cup than any other event the site has measured.
Wow. And it's because the last time we had World Cup 4 years ago, and Facebook wasn't nearly as big as it
was. Wasn't nearly as big, but more than 100 million exchanges about the World Cup.
Holy cloned cow. All right, let's let's talk about the matchup here with Team USA and Belgium. LA Galaxy insider Adam Serrano joins us live. Hey, Adam, nice to talk to you, buddy.
Nice to talk to you guys, too.
Now, this game is real, right? And by the way, go slow. We know nothing about soccer, absolutely nothing. So you could lie to us during this segment, and none of us would be the wiser. But just the same, this now you win or you go home, correct?
This is do or die. This is as big as it gets. Team USA taking on, you know, one of the international superpowers in Belgium, you know, one of the most talented teams in all the world. This is as real as it could possibly get. You talk about Olympic drama, this is real drama right here.
Yeah, so talk about how good Belgium is, because, again, you know, we'd heard that that Brazil is good, Argentina, Germany, the Dutch are good, but Belgium, there hasn't been a lot of talk about them yet, has there?
Yeah, they've been something of a dark horse team. You know, they're very talented. They have all sorts of players playing internationally in the big clubs in Europe, specifically the English Premier League, which, you know, gets a lot of play here. And they entered this tournament as one of these younger teams with a lot of talent, but they were kind of curious to see how they could actually put it all together. They have a guy named Eden Hazard who pulls the strings, playmaker type, over at Chelsea in London. Romain Lukaku, their Mario Fellaini, plays for Manchester United, who come here in July to play in the LA Galaxy. So this is a team that is pretty stacked, and it's going to require, you know, a real team effort from the Americans to kind of hassle them, get them off their game. I think where the U.S. could be, you know, in the good straits is that this Belgian team really hasn't impressed. They are a young team, and, you know, with young teams in any kind of sport, it takes them a while to kind of gel and, you know, look the part, and they really haven't looked the part yet, and they look pretty vulnerable for Team USA.
Yeah, all right. Well, Team USA has looked, I guess, okay on some days, and they looked like they were being dominated, if you know, to the untrained eye when I was watching them play Germany. But just the same, they're getting this guy. Tell me about, is it Jozy Altidore? Is that his name?
Yeah, Jozy Altidore. He's their starting forward. They just said that he's going to be ready and available for the game against Belgium.
Was he injured?
He was injured. He came up in the first half of their win against Ghana. Pulled a hamstring, looked like a serious injury, but now they're saying he's ready and available. Whether or not he's actually going to play, though, is still kind of up for grabs. Jurgen Klinsmann, the head coach, said in a press conference today down in Brazil that he wouldn't really put a number on how many minutes he could go or whether or not he's going to start or be off the bench. So I think I would look at this with a little bit of caution. You know, this might be a little bit of gamesmanship for the Belgians, saying that, you know, Jozy might be in the lineup, which would cost them to kind of change their preparations, because he's really integral to this team and his ability to kind of hold up. He's a really big body, so he can hold up the ball, pass it in the channels, and he can score. So he's somebody you have to watch out for, but whether or not he plays is still up for grabs.
Sounds fun. Any Galaxy players in Team USA?
Yes, the starting center back, Omar Gonzalez, is likely, I would think he's most likely to play in this game. He looked very good against Germany. You know, Germany are one of the best teams in the world, one of the favorites to win the World Cup. And he put in a Herculean performance against them. I think he was very good, kind of taking off space, you know, not sending out their strikers, cutting down their space to kind of operate. And he really performed beautifully. I think that he will probably get the start against Belgium, and he'll need another huge game if the U.S. is going to advance.
Is Omar friends with Landon Donovan?
they're great friends. You know?
Are they? Landon seemed a little bitter. Remind us what happened there with some comments that he made and maybe slept on and regretted that he said out loud.
Yeah, you know, Landon had an interview with Bill Plaschke at the LA Times where he said that, you know, when he was cut from the U.S. national team last month, and he said he felt some bitterness, and he actually rooted against the team internally when they played Azerbaijan in their first kind of World Cup warm-up match. And you know what? I don't think it's as serious as, you know, you might want to make it out to be, because, I mean, we've all been spurned in some way or another, and you honestly, you have those feelings. And I think Landon is a very honest guy, and he's going to say what's on his mind. And I think, you know, credit to him for going out there and saying, yeah, I kind of rooted against them in that first game, but then I realized, you know what, that's not the right way to be. I need to be supporting them. These are still my teammates. I still represented U.S. soccer. He's still the biggest face, even if he's not down there in Brazil. So it's still big for him, and I think, you know, credit for him just kind of to admit that.
I'm talking with Adam Serrano, LA Galaxy insider. Chris Martin here has a question for you, Adam.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Adam if he agreed with the decision of not bringing Donovan onto the U.S. team.
You know what? I think it was one of the more ridiculous decisions, in U.S. soccer history. And I think it's going to be a big talking point if they end up losing to Belgium, or whenever they end up losing, if they do that at all, that, you know, they didn't have Landon's presence at least off the bench. You know, it's when that decision was made, Jurgen Klinsmann kind of said that, you know, there are some guys who are just ahead of him right now, fitness-wise, and maybe we want to play him at forward and not have that kind of ability. So it's tough to say that, hey, Landon Donovan, the best player the U.S. has ever produced, cannot help you, at least off the bench. And you saw against Germany, they didn't really have that kind of option to bring off. They brought on some young players who, you know, were feisty, but really couldn't get the job done. But, I mean, imagine having a guy like Landon off the bench who's, you know, proven goal scorer in the biggest game. So I think it was a big mistake, and, you know, I hope that doesn't end up costing the U.S. In the future.
Okay, prognosticate for us. Final score tomorrow.
You know what? It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I'm going to put my Uncle Sam hat away for a minute, but, I mean, I'm still looking at it. I think the U.S. end up getting a victory over Belgium. I think they win 2-1. I think you're going to see Omar Gonzalez, LA Galaxy center back, score off a set piece. The U.S. beat Belgium. We'll play Argentina, I think, in the quarterfinals.
Wow, and that'll be something right there. Well, lovely to talk with you, and go Team USA, and tell Landon we forgive him. Adam Serrano, thanks. He's the LA Galaxy insider. We're actually talking to a soccer expert. What do you think of that, guys? Do you feel like we're on top of things?
It's better than hockey talk with Phil Hewlett.
Yeah. But see, we didn't get into this until the dude bit the other guy. Chris, did that guy ever come out and talk after he got,
yeah,
what
Luis
happened?
Suarez. He came out and apologized. He had his daughter in his arms. It was a very heartfelt apology. So,
was it?
You know, I was thinking, I hope someone told the Dutch that they can't wear their clogs onto the soccer field.
What are you talking about?
Come on.
Huh? That's
and I'm
not
banning,
allowed.
And I'm banning Belgian waffles.
I don't agree that it was a heartfelt thing. I mean, did you see the acting on the field when those guys were playing? That apology had to be acting, didn't it?
Yeah, yes. He was playing
it.
It
had
out.
To be. Hey, if you've been trying for decades to forget the 80s, at least the first half of them, we're about to bring your shoulder pads and your new romantic hair right back in your face, and we're going to do that right here next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends on KFWB News Talk 980. You are listening to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends here on KFWB News Talk 980. If you ever miss an episode of this program, if you miss today, later tonight, it'll be available for you at philhewlettandfriends.com. And all of our previous shows, they're all there. Listen on demand when you like. Hey, remember the early 80s? Disco was dying out. The punk rock scene more or less hit its pace at about, I don't know, 78, 79. Then it started trailing off, and then you had other kind of faux punk bands. But the new wave scene took off. At about the same time, something else became part of our vernacular on cable television. We're going to talk about this now. Joining us live is Jonathan Bernstein. He's the co-author of the book Mad World, an oral history of the new wave artists and songs that defined the 1980s. Jonathan, hi. Nice to talk with you.
You too. I'm sorry that subtitle is such a mouthful.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Mad World, the book. And we have it listed in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com if people would like to check it out, like to purchase
it.
The price is reasonable. So congratulations
very,
on that.
Very reasonable.
Now, we are talking about the first half of the 80s, right?
Yeah. It's funny you say disco was dying out and punk had reached its peak, because this era is really kind of the offspring of punk and disco. This is kind of the mutant baby they both created.
Yeah, you know what? I see that, because there was certainly this was more about style and about almost like role playing for a lot of people, because at the same time the music video was born, right?
Music video was born, but you know, as we say in the book, you know, you can't make a great song out of a bad video. I mean, it can certainly help a good song, but you know, in our view, this was kind of the last golden age of pop, and it just so happened that you know the visuals were there to accompany it.
Right, because the punk scene was gritty and ugly, not necessarily great for television, at least not at the time, and the disco scene. I think we were tired of the whole way that looked. And new wave was interesting. We had people with new hairdos, new clothing styles, shoulder pads, a new way of dancing. The music sounded a little different. It was just unique, wasn't it?
It was unique. And just to go back to my mutant child of punk and disco thing, it was kind of because, you know, I'm a Scottish person, and like in 1977 to 78, you got the best American disco and the best British punk. So it's no real surprise that what came a few years later was from people who were raised in that. Because if you think about it, the two hot records in Britain in like 77 were I Feel Love by Donna Summer and God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, how about that for either side of the pendulum swinging? So give us a handful of names of bands so that we could zero in on exactly what you're talking about.
Well, we got Adam and the Ants, we got Gary Numan, we got obviously Duran Duran, New Order, there's ABC, Devo, obviously from here, Echo and the Bunnymen, Spandau Ballet, Human League, and you know that goes to the point that a lot of these bands were kind of obscure underground bands who turned themselves into like international pop stars, which is a thing we haven't really seen since or previously.
It's like a bad Halloween party all of a sudden. People showing up dressed in pirate suits, right?
Exactly.
And you know, potted plants on their heads like Devo. But you know, again, it seems like so many of these bands and their fans, for that matter, they were role playing. I think what were they looking for during that period of time? Because this young music is always a form of rebellion. What do you think they were rebelling against?
Well, like you say, punk was very gritty, very much like beaten down by the world around, and this was like escapism. This was because the original British New Romantics were kind of disillusioned punk rockers, because as soon as kind of the masses moved in and started wearing safety pins, they wanted to move on to something completely different. So they started dancing to Kraftwerk and teasing up their hair and putting on makeup. And that's what kind of ballooned across Europe and ultimately to America once MTV imported it over here. So it was like you say, kind of role-playing, kind of a living your own movie thing.
You know, it did seem, though, that the punk rockers railed against, among other things, the very packaging that the new wave band seemed to embrace. Would you agree with that statement?
Ultimately, yes. But if you look at someone like Adam and the Ants, you know, they were very much a journeyman punk band. But when they decided to become pop stars, I mean, they did it in the weirdest way possible. You know, they brought in African drumming, they brought in spaghetti Western guitars, and over the top of it, they had a singer who was talking about the plight of the Native American and a Cockney accent. You know, I mean, that is the least formulaic thing you can do.
It's a little like you put a bunch of job descriptions on a piece of paper and then just connected them randomly.
It is. It's like people with Adderall just like rampaging through history and just saying, I'll take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, which is so different from where we are now when people are like so uniform, you know, in their music and what they wear, in their viewpoints. I mean, if you know, one of the things about the 80s was that bands wanted to define themselves differently from their competitors, wanted to look different, wanted to sound different, wanted to use different producers. You know, that's kind of all gone.
Now, a lot of times with music, what is all old can be new again some 20 years later. We're some 30 years later now.
Yeah.
Are these bands resurrecting their tours, and are they being well received?
Well, that's, again, the interesting thing is that a lot of these bands never went away because they're self-producing. You know, a lot of these bands, like, you know, OMD, Orchestra in the Dark, have like this huge back catalogue that means, you know, they can still play the Albert Hall in London. They can still play, you know, play their old albums. You know, groups like, you know, Adam and the Ants just played their first album in its entirety in their last tour. You know, all these bands have big back catalogues, and they still have fans that'll show up.
What was that silly side to side dancing that everybody did in the new wave bands? You know what I'm talking about? There was that movement from one side to the other. Everybody was
the
doing
electric
it.
Slide.
No, not that. That was the country thing.
I
don't know. Maybe that was just exclusive to LA. I think we did different dancing.
Blondie did it. I mean, Adam of Adam and the Ants did it too, where the kind of arms swung from one side. It was like an easy way to dance. Everybody was doing that from one side to the other side. I think it was just the opposite. I think mathematically speaking, I guess, geometrically speaking, from the punks were pogoing up and
punks
down,
were pogoing. Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the new waivers are going from side to side. It was from vertical to horizontal.
Are you sure you're not thinking about the hustle going back a decade or so?
No, that was the 70s.
I know.
Do the hustle. Oh, my gosh.
The Okie Shuffle.
Well, I love talking about music. I could do this all day with you, Jonathan Bernstein, and the book, the short version of the title is Mad World, but it's an oral history of the new wave artists and songs that defined the 1980s. Again, it's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com, and good luck with the book, and I love talking with music with you, Jonathan Bernstein.
Thanks very much.
There he goes. A Scottish person on the program today.
He nailed it, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
As far as like the artists of today being very uniform compared to the artists of the past, wanting to break out and be their own thing, and now it's just like clones.
Yeah, well, you know what? After a while, there were a whole bunch of clones in that genre as well. But we have more stories to talk about here, and what's interesting is that last week we had, was it three KFC stories?
Yeah, right.
Something to that.
KFC related stories. And Chris, there's yet another KFC story today.
Another one. This one equally as disturbing as some of the other ones that we were talking about on the show. In England, a woman and her stepson ordered chicken nuggets at a KFC. And when the young man bit into one of the nuggets, it wasn't chicken at all. Actually, KFC had accidentally deep fried a blue hand towel.
Oh, man.
Which it must have been a chunk of a blue hand towel because chicken nuggets are not that big. So, you know, I don't think it was an entire hand towel.
Well, chicken chunks. Is that on the menu?
Yes. Yeah, this is like. So KFC offered her free meal and she just turned it down. She said, I'm done with KFC forever.
Oh, she's not going to sue?
No, apparently not.
This guess must not be in America. Did you say where that is?
It's in England. Yeah.
Oh, no one.
Yeah. Newcastle, England.
If it was here, that's lawsuit city.
Right. Where bands who couldn't sell 50 tickets here are filling Albert Hall. Is that what we're talking about?
No, she said the blue roll could have been used for anything. It could have had bleach or disinfectant on it. Who knows if someone had wiped their hands on it or wiped the floor with it?
You know what? I bet it was still delicious because it was dunked in deep fried.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Anything deep fried is tasty.
Shut up, kid, and eat your lunch.
Seriously.
Next, they're going to be selling that at the county fair, right? You know what? A lot of times at the county fair, on the fairgrounds, they have these gun shows. And there was a gun show in Pennsylvania, Jay, that had an unusual result. What happened?
That is correct. A Pennsylvania gun vendor may face criminal charges after accidentally shooting a woman
at a gun
in the
show.
Leg. While demonstrating a concealed carry holster. And this is the greatest part of this story. So, okay, come around, gather around. I'm going to show you how to use this new fang-dangled holster. And instead of using a plastic gun, he used a real one, and it actually had a round in the chamber.
Yeah.
So it's like a .38 special. Nailed her right in the leg. She went into the hospital. But the name of the company?
Yeah.
In Case of Emergency.
No! Well... See, they were just pushing fate, weren't they?
Yeah, so tempting. He actually could spend 2 years in prison and a $5,000 fine.
You'd think a guy who's demonstrating gun uses, safe gun uses, would go through all the steps. First of all, safety on, unloaded gun.
Correct.
All these different things that they do. Never pointed at anybody, including someone's leg.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Can you imagine that? Oh, that looks good. Okay, so what you do is you pull it out and then you just go pop. Whoops.
I suppose they sold a bunch of product that weekend.
I doubt it.
At the convention.
Evidently, they said there was like that moment of terror because a gun goes off at a gun show and you're like, okay, is there going to be more?
It's going down.
Yeah. It's happening right now. Our biggest fears. And then they figured out that it was just the one. It was an accident. And then
the kid on the PA system has a sense of humor. Everybody run for cover.
Oh, God.
Hey, if you want to make a movie these days, the rules of fundraising have changed. And up next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends, you'll hear from a pretty big star who couldn't get his idea funded the traditional way, and he went directly to his fans, and we'll tell you how that went. And more here on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for listening to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Jennifer Bjorklund is here. So are Jay Capadonia and Chris Martin. We love when you tune in to KFWB every weekday afternoon at 2. Golden State was a cult favorite, a movie, big hit at the Hewlett household. My girls love it. Forced me to watch it one day, and I loved it as well. But not the kind of movie Hollywood seems to be looking for these days. Still, the star of that movie is at it again, and our new entertainment reporter, Gail Murphy, is here.
Hey.
She sat down with Zach Braff. And Gail, nice to talk with you, young lady. What's the new movie called and what's it all about?
Well, the new movie is titled Something I Feel a Lot is Wish I Was Here. He wrote with his brother. And it's if you loved Garden State, you will like this movie very much. Braff stars as a 30-something, not so much actor, where he's really at a, like a make it or break it, die or get go to the next level kind of crossroads. And it's well worth the price of admission.
And you talked with Mr. Braff, didn't you?
I did. Right here in L.A.
What did he have to say?
Well, you know, the cool thing about this movie is that, you know, he wrote it, he directed it, you watch it.
You love it.
And you continue to watch it. Oh,
so
she's back.
I asked him, you know, that because it is so personal, it's a touching father and son story. This is what he had to say. Why?
Father-son stories just get me. I'm a sucker for them. I mean, I have a complicated relationship with my father. I love him very much, and we're now best friends. But when I was growing up, it was often at times difficult. I wanted to write what moved me and what's true for me. That was the experiment of this whole exercise was, you know, if you aren't forced to compromise on what you're writing, if you're not forced to change anything, what would you write? And my brother and I wrote something that was very personal and what we felt about spirituality, what we felt about our fear about losing our dad, what we felt about going after our dreams when we were getting old.
Yeah, so judging by that description, you know, I asked him, I said, is this a comedy? Is it a tragedy? What's your message here?
I'm 39, but the character I play is 35, who's clutching onto a dream that he has not had success at. And I think we hint at the movie that maybe it isn't real his real calling. We see him his a couple of attempts at acting and they're pretty horrible, but it's his passion. So what I wanted to do was have this flawed protagonist who's so laser focused on a dream that he's holding on to that he doesn't see A, his family or the love that's around him or that he's not showing up. And B, that his dream might be accessible if he looks at it from a slightly different angle. So I guess my message for, you know, is different. You know, you say to a young man, you know, go at it full bore, work your ass off, do anything and everything you can, and know that every time that you're sitting on your butt, someone else is working hard at it. But it's a different conversation to a family man with kids and a wife working her butt off at a job she hates, who still hasn't had his dream come true. He has to show up for his family, and he has to potentially look at his dream in a different way.
How did he, Gail, how did he make or get the backing to shoot this film in the first place?
Well, you know, he talks about looking at your dream in a different way. He and his brother just completely kicked butt on Kickstarter, you know, and they raised something like $2 million in 72 hours or 2 days or something ridiculous like that. So what I wanted to know was, how did you pitch this thing for $2 million?
You have to trust me that I'm going to make something that you're going to like. It's in the tone of Garden State. It's my style. This is the rough bullet points of the story. But I was doing something that no one had done on this level before, was saying, I want to make you something that I'm pretty sure if you like Scrubs and Garden State, you're going to like. But no one will let me do it. Now, of course, I have my own money and I'm going to put in a bunch. But I didn't write a very small movie. I wrote a film that I can't figure out how to make in L.A., which is important to me because it takes place in L.A., for less than $5.5 million. So if you help me by buying a T-shirt or by buying a ticket to a screening with a Q&A or by buying the soundtrack early, what have you, we can make the movie together. And that's what the pitch was.
Sounds like a lot of fun. And he says it's very L.A., huh? How so?
Oh, yeah. L.A. plays a huge character in this movie. The film is gorgeous. It was shot right in our backyard. So he talks a little bit more about that.
I didn't think I was writing a love letter to L.A., but I think I did write a love letter to L.A. I think that Larry Scherer, my cinematographer, shot L.A. so incredibly beautifully that it looks like a travel log for L.A. And we tried to show all the different sides of L.A., from the Deep Valley to a cliff in Malibu. And I think LA is a character in the film because for me, it is where my struggles for going after my dream took place.
Okay, yeah. Zach Braff, I'll buy it. It sounds like a good film. Who else is in it? Any big names?
Oh, yes. It's his wife is played by Kate Hudson. His dad is played by Mandy Patinkin, which is most famously known as in Homeland. Big Bang Theory's Jim Parsons and former Scrubs star and BBF Donald Faison.
All right. When is it? So he hasn't started shooting this, has he? Or is it done? Is it going to hit theaters?
It's done, baby.
When does it hit?
Nationally, on July 18th, you know, they premiered it at Sundance and it sold the very next day to Focus Film. So there you go. Get ready. Get
Sounds
your popcorn.
Like a success. Way to go. Good get, Gail Murphy. Nice to talk with you. We'll catch you next time when you're hobnobbing with some big stars.
Always.
Take care. There she goes, Gail Murphy, our new entertainment reporter. What do you think of that?
I love Scrubs. That show was great.
Yes. And Zach's a funny guy.
Yeah, it was fun. It was entertaining. It was cute. I enjoyed that show for a lot of years.
Yes. You know what? It's good. He has kind of a, what do you call that style of humor? Is it dry? Is it downplayed? Whatever it is. Even when he's not telling a joke, it seems like you want to laugh.
Yeah, it's very self-deprecating, and that's always good. That always comes off as like clever and appealing.
You know, my car lately, it's been running a little rough on the road. Not the engine's fine, but I'm starting to feel all the bumps in the road, and I wonder if I need a little help with the shock absorbers, Chris. What could help with that? Any ideas?
You might want to add a little fur in them.
Wait. Fur?
Yeah, fur in your shock absorbers. You've never heard of that?
No.
Well, there's this guy in Russia. He went on a road trip. He went over 50 miles on the highway in his Land Cruiser. He was doing speeds of over 80 miles per hour at times. He pulled over to fill up his gas tank, and he heard a little noise coming from his car. He heard the faint sound of a kitten.
Oh.
He noticed a small patch of fur around the wheel well. The little guy was trapped inside the spring of the suspension system. He was remarkably calm when they removed him. They have no idea how he got there, and they hope to find the cat's owner by using social media now. So,
you call that a cat absorber?
It'd be a cat absorber. I also thought that the cat probably lost one of his 9 lives in that whole incident.
So one down, eight
one
to go.
Two.
Eight to go. We have one or two.
There you go. Nicely done. Hey, we love your comments. Send us an email, feedback@philhewlettandfriends.com. On Twitter, we're @AsWeSeeItShow. Mike Starks, our executive producer. Nick Wright, thank you for your help. Our theme song, composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Jennifer, Jay, and Chris, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk with you next time when we call it As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.